of the Seder Part 2. Everyone hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, so let's start with this. We spoke about yesterday some of the details regarding the dalkosos, how much a person is supposed to drink, how much is supposed to be in the cup, and just a couple final points on the dalkosos. A person should not stretch out the drinking unnecessarily. Rather, should take it down normally without much of a pause, just like matzah, where a person has to eat a gazayas, but the gazayas also has to be eaten within some sort of time frame. The same thing is true about the wine. There's something called kadei shesias revias as well, and which many poskim agree is the time frame during which a person has to complete revias when that is what they're trying to accomplish, especially when it comes to the obligation to recite bracha achrona, al gefen in this case. If a person drank it too slowly, there's no tzirf. It's not viewed as one long drinking of a revias to constitute an obligation for the bracha achrona. So therefore, especially on the fourth cup, but for the other cups as well, again, we're not saying to chug it down very quickly, but the few ounces that you're drinking, three and a third ounces, we said, according to the more makel opinions, should be drunk without much more than a slight pause. Now, ideally, red wine is the best. White wine is acceptable also, but red wine is better. Based on a pasuk, alter yayin kisaden. No need to use wine with a significant alcohol content. You can take ketem kal, which is about 3.5% alcohol, or Rashi Light, which is 5.5% alcohol. And especially once you get a little bit higher, including the Rashi Light, you can even dilute it. You can put in grape juice, is even better, or water in order to make it a little more tolerable. But if a person can't handle the wine at all, so then the next best thing is to have grape juice instead. Salvagic held that was acceptable. It is true that Moshe Feinstein and others held that it's not a fulfillment of the dalkosos, because one of the requirements of the dalkosos is that it has to be derech chiras, and that's what the dalkosos represent. So the advantage of having an alcoholic beverage accomplishes that aspect of chiras. The other side of the story, Salvagic accepted the grape juice because of a svara, which you can also understand that if a person doesn't enjoy the wine whatsoever and they find it intolerable, so then that's also not derech chiras to have something which is so much against your preferences. Although it does say, and it's clear from the Gemara like this, that a person is supposed to exert themselves a little bit, even if it's difficult to drink the wine, even if they'll have a headache afterwards, according to that opinion. But again, Salvich was makel to permit wine, to permit grape juice. Many people rely on that, and other poskim who agree similarly. Okay, now each of the four cups should be filled up by someone else other than the person who's drinking. The Shulchan Aruch explicitly mentions the Baal Bais, but that has been expanded also to other people at the table too. I always tell Talmidim they should try to be on their feet before each of the kosos to fill up everybody else's cup. Whoever will fill up yours, they'll fill up yours. But you should be the active and energetic participant throughout the Seder, because it'll rub off and spill over on everybody else as well, to enhance the overall experience of the Seder. There's an interesting story about the Chofetz Chaim. In his old age, he was once nodding off in between the cups, and he didn't wake up until he noticed someone had already filled his cup, because that's what they were up to in the Seder. And because he felt that it was necessary to experience the Cheres himself, which is accomplished through having different people fill up each other's cups. So he actually had them spill it out or pour it into a different cup, and he wanted to be awake to witness someone pouring the wine to his cup, because that would be the full achievement of the chiras that this practice is meant to attain. Okay, we discussed matzah, we discussed wine. Let's look at the Seder plate a little more in detail. So we had two cooked foods on the Seder plate. One is the zroa, what people usually refer to as the shank bone, and one is the egg, and both of them are supposed to be roasted. The zroa parallels the Korban Pesach, and the egg is connected to the Korban Chagiga, which was brought often on the same day in time of the Beis HaMikdash. The reason for that additional carbon is because one is supposed to eat the Korban Pesach at the end of the meal, as you know, and that's represented by the Afikomen. And the reason why it comes at the end of the meal is because the carbon is supposed to be eaten specifically on a full stomach. Not that you're stuffing yourself, that it's not even pleasurable anymore, but on a relatively full stomach. That's considered a luxurious and a regal form of dining. A person's never hungry, he's always a little bit satiated, and nevertheless has the ability to keep dining. So that would befit the eating of the carbon, and specifically in this context of the Acheres. So as a result, on the Beis HaMikdash, people would often bring another carbon in addition to the Korban Pesach, namely the Chagiga, to fill themselves up with during the meal in advance of actually eating the Korban Pesach itself. They would eat much less of the Korban Pesach itself, in theory. So they need to fill up on other things. Very often, many people group together, like we discussed in the Shirim Pesachim before, to create a chabura. And as a result, there were smaller portions given to each member of the Korban Pesach. They only had to have one kezias each. So by having the chagiga, that would fill them up. The reason why they didn't eat too much of the Korban Pesach, they had a lot of members to each chabura, was this would ensure that no Korban Pesach was unnecessarily left over, which we know is the prohibition of Nosar, and the Korban has to be burnt. So this was one way of avoiding that. Okay, why specifically an egg? If we're trying to represent a Korban Chagiga, it could have been any other cooked food. Why specifically an egg? So some say that it's a hint to Avelis. Mourners are fed round foods, which represents, one explanation is it represents a circle of life, cycle of life. And we see that in Chumash, Yitzchak was going to be fed red lentils by Yaakov on the day that he was in Avelis for Avram Avinu. And the relevance of Avelis over here is because the first night of Pesach is always the same night of the week as the day on which Tisha B'Av falls out. So as a result, there's an inyan to make some sort of Zeichel L'Churban, something that can indeed be an undercurrent behind many practices at the Seder, such as wearing the kittel. Others disagree and find other explanations for practices like wearing the kittel, because it would seem a little bit odd to add a dimension of mourning to an otherwise very festive time and a very joyous yontif at the Seder. So that is a debate as to whether or not the notion of the egg is there as a Zeichel Churba or it has other significance. In any case, one is certainly allowed to eat the egg at the Seder, even though it is roasted, but this is in contradistinction to the Zeruah, which one may not eat at the Seder. And the reason is because one is not allowed to eat any roasted meat at the Seder, lest it be misunderstood to actually be the Korban Pesach, which had to be roasted as well. And there's a number of things that we do to ensure that there's no confusion in this area, that everything we have on the Seder plate, everything we do in connection with Pesach that represents the Korban Pesach is only a Zeichel Adover, not actually the Korban itself. An example would be when we get to Rav Gamliel Omer, Koshlo Omer, Gimel Dvarim, L'Yotzei Dechavaso. So we mention in the list over there, Pesach, Matzah, and Mor, and we point or we lift up the plate with the matzah when we say Pesach, and we point to the Mor when we say Mor, and then read that paragraph. But when it comes to the first paragraph of Pesach, so we do not point to it, to the Zeruah on the table, so it should not be mistaken for the Korban Pesach. There's another halacha that appears earlier in Shulchan Aruch, in Tar Simon, which says that week two, 3 weeks before Pesach, when a person goes to the grocery store and they buy meat for Pesach, they're not supposed to say, oh, this is for Pesach. And the reason is because it may be misunderstood as if a person is being makdish kachem chutz, as if a person is designating something to be a korban, to have that holy status of kachem outside of the Beis HaMikdash, which is obviously not the intention. But for various reasons, we're marchik. We establish that there should be no confusion whatsoever in terms of what is not really a korban pesach, only a zecher, but should not be taken in the wrong way. Okay. On the other hand, though, it is important to also keep in mind the Chayyadim says. It's a big mistake that people make. They have the Zeruah on their Seder plate, and very often it just gets thrown out because people don't eat it at the Seder, and they don't think to make an effort to eat it any other point over Pesach, and that's a bizarre to the mitzvah. It's there as a function of Zecher L'Korban Pesach, and it's part of the Seder plate. It has chashivas in that regard, so to just discard it would not be appropriate. A person should eat it at some point over Yontif so that it doesn't get thrown out. Now, it may have a slightly different implications b'zman hazeh, although the Chayyadim's point is still true. The reason why it may be different nowadays is very often in today's commercialized, you know, you can buy everything situation. So people often go to the supermarket, kosher supermarket, and they'll buy a pre-made Seder plate, or at least they'll get in a package as raw that's already roasted, ready to stick on the Seder plate with the egg and with the mara and everything else. If that's the case, okay, so just make sure to eat it at some point. The stakes are higher if your mother or whoever's at home is actually roasting the Zeruah for the purposes of the Seder. At least in the post we discussed, it was not uncommon for people to do the roasting on Pesach itself, once Yontif had already begun, to roast the Zeruah. The reason why that is significant is because if a person performs a malacha of roasting on Yontif, the assumption is that that's permissible, ochel nefesh, because you're going to eat it on Yontif. But if a person roasts the Zeruah and never actually eats it over the course of the Yontif, even if they eat it a week later, so there's not going to be a bizayin, it's not going to be discarded as the Chayyadim was concerned. But it could be an Isra Malacha, which is even more of a problem if it's not eaten over Yontif itself. If it's saved for some later date, so then it's no different than than waking up one morning of Yontif and cooking something that you're going to eat on a weekday, which is obviously an Isser Muacha. Okay, moving on to Mar. Most people nowadays use romaine lettuce, and it would indeed seem to be, from the Pashat Peshat in Maseches Pesachim, that this is the preferred species of Mar. The Mishnah has five different species that are listed that are acceptable in the Mishnah as Mar. And at first glance, when you taste romaine lettuce, it doesn't really seem like it's too bitter. Chazal tells us that the reason why it is a preferred and acceptable method or vehicle for the Indian of Mar at the Seder is because although it begins somewhat sweet, if it's left on the ground for long enough, it begins to take on a bitter taste. So we don't wait that long till we take it out of the ground and serve. The Chazon Ish does write that he held that it wasn't kosher for Mar unless it has at least begun to take on some of that bitter flavor, but most are not makbid for this. Shami says that maror has this characteristic. It's not just a cheap way out, so to speak, to have maror that in theory could become bitter once it goes through the sweet phase. It's more than that. The Shibud of Mitzrayim, which is represented by the maror, actually followed a similar progression as well. Initially, it was also sweet, and then it became much more difficult. People lived in Goshen, and Paro enlisted them to work on his behalf in a very friendly way, and it was part of the loyal, you know, civil service to the government to Egypt. And then eventually, the power and his taskmasters turned it into something which was really slavery. So in the same way that the Shibud, which the Mar represents, began sweet and then became very tough, so it's appropriate for the species of Mar that we select to have that same symbolism. Finally, Charoses, which we use to dip the Mar and the Korechen, should be prepared before Yontif for various issues of Malacha, such as Tochen, such as Lisha, when possible. And there are different minhagim as to the precise ingredients, but there are a few specific details that are important to keep in mind no matter what your specific recipe is. It should be thick, like the tit, like the cement or the mortar that the Jewish people used when they were working in slavery in Mitzrayim. It is thick, although we add wine, zecher l'dam, and that helps loosen it up a little bit. But besides that, many people use long stalks, for example, cinnamon sticks that represent the straw, resemble the straw that was, you know, also had a similar appearance, and that was an important ingredient, specifically at one juncture in the Pesukim. We're told that Paro was providing the straw, and then he said, no, you're wasting time, you're complaining, you want to leave Mitzrayim, you're working too hard, must be because you have too much time on your hands. And then he says, okay, you're going to have to gather up your own straw in order to make the bricks, in order to build the buildings. So that's an important component of the recipe for the Charoses. And another thing is various fruits and nuts that are included. And the reason why we choose these is because we find in Chazal, based on Shir Shirim, that these components are species that Klal Yisrael is compared to, specifically Shir Shirim, which is the Megillah of Pesach, which talks about the love between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, with a special focus on Yitzis Mitzrayim and the love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu demonstrated in that context as well.